Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Phil Colicchio broadcasting live from Roberta's here in Bushwick, and we are broadcasting on the Heritage Radio Network. You are listening to The Business of the Business, the show that explores the business side of the restaurant and hospitality industries. And if you missed this broadcast, and I don't know anyone who's ever missed this broadcast, but if you do, you can find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes. It's nice to be back in the chair after a bit of a holiday hiatus. Happy New Year to everyone. Hope 2013 is treating you all very well and that we're all done with storms and pestilence and bad things, and that we're looking forward to a great 2013. So if you'll indulge me, I'd like to get down to business. I'm a lawyer. And during my time as a lawyer in the hospitality industry, I have known and represented people who've wanted to open a restaurant. And I have known and represented people who have wanted to open a hotel. People who have wanted to become a chef. But the people who intrigue me most in my business are those who speak in plurality. I want to open restaurants. I want to open hotels. I want to open businesses. Well, I can tell you that building a restaurant group is much different than building a single restaurant unit. And in order to build a group, well, you got to have dreams. And you got to have the ability and the wherewithal to roll your sleeves up. You need big dreams. And you need, frankly, you need a pretty big brain to do it. Today, my guest is Christian Papanicolaou. Christian is the principal owner, chief financial and philosophical officer of the Brother New York City restaurants Resto and The Cannibal on East 29th Street. Welcome, Christian.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. It's great to be here.
Well, it's excellent to have you here. Two of my favorite places in New York City to take a load off and to enjoy real, what I would consider to be real, heartfelt hospitality and food that is cared about but not in a fussy way are your two restaurants.
Thanks. I think you're saying that just because we feed you a lot of beer when you get there.
It's,
in this way.
You know,
we always try to convince you very thoroughly through many, many different libations to
not true.
Say nice things.
Not true. Not true. You are a beer guy, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. And if I had everybody who gave me beer on this show, we'd never get through a show. But what I can tell you is this: you've done some incredibly interesting things with your restaurants. I don't care what's in the kale salad,
right?
Today, I don't care what's in that. I don't care where you buy your cabbage today. Mm-hmm. What I care about today is understanding what's in your head when you decide to change careers and move into one of the riskiest businesses that exists in the United States.
You know, it's those things are probably induced by some of the beer and some of the product that intrigues me about the industry. No, I mean, it's, you know, anything worth doing is worth doing for you know, I think out of two reasons. One is out of necessity. One is out of passion.
Right.
You know, this is definitely an industry, I think, that's driven from a passion of mine. You know, it's the love of the libation. It's the love of the of what is in, you know, in the kale salad. But, you know, moreover, it's the one to create.
Right.
You know, I love the entrepreneurial spirit to create, you know, to take something from an idea and follow through to, you know, to building it and developing it. And actually, you know, quite frankly, even more than that is to, you know, it's to try to find a way to make it sustainable.
It's,
and,
you know,
that's, you know, that's always been sort of something in my makeup and my DNA.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, rather than work for a company that, you know, which I saw good success and really enjoyed, mm-hmm. this was really not even an option.
It's funny. You know, you use the word sustainable, and I often use the word organic when I see companies that really have got a great idea and grow. But we're not talking about the granola type of sustainability there.
No.
We're talking about the type of sustainability and an organic sense that allows a business to grow and allows the business to keep its doors open mm-hmm. and to open many more doors. So my question a moment ago was a little bit unfair. So I want to make it a little bit more fair. Christian, you didn't come at this in a particularly traditional way, even though you came from a family of restaurant people. That wasn't where your future was going, was it?
No, absolutely not. You know, the idea, you know, out of high school, knew I was going to be in business. Fairly certain it was going to be real estate development.
Yeah.
Came to New York and worked for, you know, one of the best real estate companies, Edward S. Gordon. And you know, that was where the path was.
And you focused on finance and entrepreneurship, right?
Yes, yeah. Babson College was an entrepreneur's finance and real estate
right.
major. So, you know, and had a great, great experience, you know, during that time, learning from some of the most, you know, amazing entrepreneurs in the country.
The commercial real estate business is a huge part of the economy. What would make you walk away
again? It's,
from a successful career.
You know, I'm somebody who's very driven by, you know, what I'm passionate about. If I'm passionate about something, nothing's going to stand in my way to see success in it.
I mean, I'm going to do a nickel psychological profile on
you. Yeah, it's very easy to do.
Dad, I don't want to get into your business. I'm not doing it. I'm going so far away from it that you'll never find me again. But here it is pulling me back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did that happen?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my mother laughed and said, you know, you just spent all this time and all these internships and you're seeing all the success and now you're going to go open a restaurant. Like, you know, you went to one of the best schools in the country for what you're for the business and you're going down that road. I said, well, look, at the end of the day, the principles still apply.
Right.
And yes. And, you know, I knew at some point I'd follow the path. I knew it was there. I think I just had thought about it later in life. I'd see enough success in the real estate industry where I'd say, oh, I'll just go open a restaurant or invest in a restaurant someday. Well, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure it went like this. But Mom, I'm not going to open a restaurant.
No, I mean, I don't think either my mother or my father had any thoughts that I was going to, you know, try to one-off and just go do something. And, you know,
as a matter of fact, a one-off was never really in your plan, was it?
No. Absolutely not.
Okay, so let's talk about that. I'm fascinated by the people who say I want to create a group because I've got a vision. I've got something to say. It's not, you know, maybe it's a little bit like a musician, an artist who has a lot to say mm-hmm. and knows they can put that on an album or on multiple albums. Multiple.
Right.
I don't know any musicians who say I want to make one album and then call it a day. So. Tell me about your vision here. How did this come to pass?
Well, originally Resto, which you know opened in 2007,
to great reviews, by the
thank
way.
Thank you. Yeah,
great
it was,
reviews.
It was
2 stars. I'm sure that wasn't even what you were going for.
You know, we wanted to have a great. I mean, that was a Times review, and we wanted to have a great review. The goal was to, you know, the team at the time we were really strong and we were really excitable and we were confident, but but we weren't overconfident. I mean, and especially the dynamic of the dining world then. I mean, you know,
oh yeah,
the Honorable Frank Bruni's in the hot seat at the Times, and nobody really knew where he was going with a lot of reviews. And you know, you're also up against, you know, the likes of Sambar, things
exactly.
like that. And that was, you know, that was the
and that was Resto wasn't open to be edgy.
Well, you know, we definitely wanted to do smart food. We wanted to force the issue with you know, when it came to meat. Like we knew beer was something that was very important to us. I felt that nobody was representing food and beer the way it should be. So you're saying, you know, I'm going to use a lot of off cuts. I'm going to do really high technique food, but in a casual atmosphere. But instead of, you know, producing a regular wine list, I said, look, let's drag the Belgian input, you know, the Belgian influence of the beer and the food into it, and
right.
and you know, I mean, not unlike, you know, something we're drinking right now.
Yeah, we're,
you know,
yeah.
it's beer made by monks, and you say, you know, this is a perfect kind of beer that goes with the food that we were doing. But
I couldn't resist, by the way, before the show, Christian saw Orval on the bar menu, and we had to order a couple, so we're enjoying it now.
Yeah, absolutely. We were ecstatic with the reviews to be, you know, one of the top 10 that year from Bruni and from Platt as well was, you know, was a big honor. And we were ecstatic by the fact, and we were really proud of what we did. I mean, at the end of the day, the team of people really came together and did an amazing
job. And that was
to
be able to do that. And then again, with your vision was that this is the beginning, and now you've got something spectacular to leverage off of.
Yeah.
Because, by the way, the space, the Resto space is not a big space. It's not not a Gramercy Tavern type space. And I would venture to say that it is much more geared to being a neighborhood space.
Absolutely. I mean, we want to be the best neighborhood restaurant that, you know. And, you know, we felt that there wasn't a lot in our neighborhood, in that sort of micro
right.
neighborhood that we were in. There just wasn't a lot of restaurants doing the kind of
thing. And we're talking about 29th between Park and Madison.
Lexington. Yeah. But, you know, it's, you know, from there it was a matter of, you know, making sure that thing was sustainable. As I said, it you know, we needed to make sure that was, you know, it wasn't just, you know, hey, we put a great team together and the reviews are great. You know, that's not the model here. The mm-hmm. model, you know, you want those things, but the model is to build a business that's sustainable. The model is to build a business that's successful and it produces what it needs to produce, both, you know, in the culinary aspects, but also in the financial aspects, because that allows you to do the things that you want to do creatively. And that's, you know, that's the cornerstone of it.
Bingo, bango, bongo. And I say amen to that because people don't seem to get that. The margins in this industry, when you're very successful, are still not large margins.
Right.
Correct?
Yes.
So if you've got a dream and you got a plan, you've got to know that if you're making 15, if you're making 20% in the restaurant industry, you're wildly successful.
Yes.
And, you know, most people wouldn't go into business if that was what their chance of making a profit was.
Correct.
Right. I mean, in a commercial real estate guy, if a developer thought he was going to make 15% on a project, would he develop it?
Not in Manhattan, he wouldn't.
Hell no.
No way.
Right. So you clearly had a mindset that said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this in a big way. I mean, in a big way in a multiple unit sense.
Yes. I mean, you have to go in, you know, you have to go in with the idea that there's that one unit. Well, I guess, let me backtrack a second. I think it, you know, you can approach it, people approach it two different ways. I mean, you could not count the number of outrageously successful restaurants in New York City that are owner operated and run, and that person's there 5-6 days a week, and they, you know, they probably have amazing returns, they keep their costs down. It's not necessarily the most chef driven concept of the world.
Yeah.
And you know, I will applaud those guys as much, if not more, as I will any other, you know, very widely popular and acclaimed restaurant, because those guys, you know, they'll take 15 years and renew, you know, even after increases of rent, because their model works and it's successful. They'll take, you know, and they'll have a great life.
Right.
That, I love that. That's not what I set out to do.
Right.
I could have done that, and that, you know, and I would have had Resto and I would have been very happy with it. But you know, my mindset was always, I have a lot of creative, you know, energy, and I want to, you know, I want to take those ideas and develop them. And, you know, and that sort of, you know, and that's, that being said, it, you have to, you know, you have to mediate your risk.
Absolutely.
You can't just, there were a lot of times where a lot of people had said, you know, after we got all the reviews we got, oh, you're going to open up something else, you're going to open something else. And, you know, it was 5 years till I, you know, till I opened the Cannibal. Because
I want to talk about the Cannibal, but I don't want to rush it, because the Cannibal is kind of special in my mind. But I want to ask you something. So you've got a, you decided Resto was going to be, not chuck the wine list, but minimize the wine list and maximize the beer list. What's more expensive?
Oh, they're almost equal now.
Really?
I mean, when you, 5 years ago they weren't, but I can tell you that I remember buying cases of beer that were $60 for a case,
right,
and thinking that was a lot of money.
Right.
And if I buy that same case of beer right now, it's probably 90.
Man.
I mean, so, and that's 4 years.
Yeah.
Same exact product. No difference. It's not, you know, they didn't, this is not a rebranding. This is not Honda rebranding the brand and saying, you know, we're going to put,
right,
you know, we're going to put a nicer engine.
Well, first of all, let's clear it up for the people. So how many beers are on your beer list?
The Resto list has about 110, 115.
Okay. And that is the size of a half-decent wine list.
Or what, you know, and I
oh, there's nothing wrong with your wine list,
no,
but
no,
we're
no,
talking
no.
about beer, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I'm a wine guy. I'm a wine guy first and foremost. Always have been. So I always struggle between which I am sort of more romanced by at the time.
I noticed you didn't buy wine when we walked
No,
in
I
here.
Did not buy
okay.
one. But, you know, I don't know. I think beer is more radio appropriate.
I don't know. There's some pretty fine whiskey that goes.
Well, that yes. Well, we didn't get into spirits, but
But I wanted to know. I thought to myself at first. I said, well, Matt, that maybe that's a cool business idea that we're going to go beer heavy because it's a less expensive beverage to acquire from a retailing standpoint, and I can turn it over at a nice margin without hurting my customer.
Well. For my concept, there was the challenge was, whereas normally if you're in a in a bar model, your margins are different. I mean,
yeah.
you're not dealing with your labor, you're not dealing with your food margins that we're dealing
right.
with. So, quite frankly, we needed to be on the upper end of our margins when it came to the beer program.
See, it's
and that
funny.
Was a challenge.
It's funny. I don't see people being offended at the price of quality beer, but I do see people offended at the prices of quality wines. It's a curious. It's just a curious idiosyncratic thing, I think, in this industry.
Well, you know, beer is at its. I mean, it is growing exponentially. I mean, the industry is the craft beer industry is growing so quickly and. And I think you're going to see it. I think we're starting to see it. We start to see that a little bit. People start to look at quality beer products. I mean, you know, especially when you start to look at large bottles.
Oh, look, it's a monster industry around the nation and, frankly, in the world. Every time you pick up the Wall Street Journal, you're seeing articles and thought about the brewing industry mm-hmm. and how much of a garage industry it started as and now has really blossomed because actually a lot of state laws have changed
yes.
and have created the ability to put crafted beers in the same spot where you can serve food
right
and creating an environment that's pleasing and positive for consumers and the tax base
yes
right
yes
there we go
exactly
so. What we're going to do, we're going to take a little minute. We're going to take a break.
Great.
Maybe we'll finish these beers and we'll talk a little bit more. We're going to have a word from the sponsor here of the show. And we come back, we're going to talk about the second leg on what is going to be a several-leg table. We're going to talk about the Cannibal with Christian Papanicolaou here on The Business of the Business. Phil Colicchio, wishing you a happy new year.
You're listening to Movement and Location by the Punch Brothers on heritageradionetwork.org. You should raise your
International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Every Wednesday at noon, Dorothy Cann Hamilton, founder and CEO of the International Culinary Center, interviews the top chefs in the world on Chef Story. Hear from chefs like Christina Tosi.
I'm going to be the best pastry cook this restaurant's ever seen.
Francis Malman.
Cooking with fire, it's very feminine, it's very fragile.
And Jacques Pepin.
I was invited to work at the White House for John Kennedy.
Learn how the greats become great every Wednesday at 12 p.m. on Chef Story at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, we're back on the business of the business here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My guest is Christian Papanicolaou, and Christian is also a graduate of the ICC. Proud graduate. I'm sure that that your name and photo and plaque will be on the wall any day now.
I'm sure it will.
Hey, I also want to give a shout out of thanks to the Punch Brothers for the great music they provide for the show. Boy, oh boy, did they put on a New Year's Eve show at the Bowery Ballroom this year.
I am expecting an invite next year, by the way.
You're on. And congratulations to Chris Thiele and Noam Pikelny for their Grammy nominations. And I'm sure that they're going to be taking home those little Victrola record players when they finish up. Enough about the music, a little bit more about the business. The Cannibal. What a name. What a great name. Evokes all kinds of meat and tearing and imbibing and loudness and lack of manners and fun, if you're into the cannibal thing, I guess. But I want to know, where did that come from, Christian? I mean, that couldn't have been sitting around in your head for too long.
No, absolutely not. You know, to go back to something I said earlier, I think that, you know, when I think of developing a concept, it's really based around one of two things. It's either a passion for something or it's out of necessity. It is true that the Cannibal is named after Eddie Merckx, who is a very famous Belgian cyclist. You know, I mean, inspired by that. I am very into cycling. That was not the impetus to it. The impetus was, at Resta, we do the large format feast. And,
yeah.
we were doing a lot. And we didn't have enough room to hang our pigs and lambs and goats and, you know, four quarters of veal and sides of beef. And we needed a place to do that work.
So when I first saw Cannibal, the Cannibal, and I walked in, I smirked. And I smirked because what I saw in my mind's eye was someone who walked into Italy, looked around and said, wow, this is just so big and impersonal. I can do this in 1,000 square feet. And I walked in, and in front of me I saw a bar. And to the right of me, I saw a beer case. And to the left of me, I saw dry goods. And in the further back I walked, I actually saw a butcher shop. And when I walked even further back, I saw this great outdoor space. And I said, you can't do this in 1,200 square feet. As a matter of fact, I even saw somebody sitting behind the bar drinking, which made me scratch my head until I realized that was actually a patron seat.
Yeah, it wraps all the way around. You know, space is very, very big commodity.
It's eclectic, so. But it's happily eclectic. Tell me about I want to know the business model for the Cannibal, because it's not a traditional business model.
I think originally it was.
I guess back in the day.
It was not. I mean, by any means. I mean, you know, my real estate background kept me very in tune to what was going on around me. And when the space became available, you know, it was sort of, you know, the first thought in my mind was, well, I'm gonna end up jamming a square peg into a round hole here, but I got to put something in this. You know, I'm not gonna let this thing go away. You know, the idea of a beer and butcher shop, it sounded right, it flowed off the tongue right, and there was a lot of things that we needed. I mean, we really did need a place. We did really want some sort of butcher concept because it tied right into the brand that was
Absolutely.
Resta. That being said, you know, we're talking about business, and I don't know much about being a butcher. You know, I, at the time that, you know, the team we talked about is like, well, what do we know about retail butchering?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's stuff that you can learn, and that's you know, not an easy task.
Do you sell a lot of product?
You know, in comparison to the overall, you know, sales of the company, no, but it's, you know, it is that added amenity.
Exactly.
And quite frankly, it's something that we continue to push and continue to grow.
Right.
And that's, you know, for us, it's the ancillary benefit. You know, it's like, well, we can do what we do as far as serving diners and right. drinkers, but, you know, people come in and get custom cut meats, and that's a great thing. And charcuterie, which really is a big portion of what we're talking about here. I'm not just selling chicken thighs and chicken breast to everybody. It's really more about the charcuterie and the custom cut meats than that.
Oh, it looks like a butcher shop from, frankly, when I was a kid, and small counter, but literally a manned counter with the slicing machine,
yeah.
with, you know, with the appropriate cutlery, the whole thing. If you haven't visited Cannibal, please get down there, because it's the Cannibal, because it is an extraordinary concept. In a terrific space that is very intimate,
which is his nice way of saying small.
No, it's not. Well, you know what? It's small when it's crowded. It's intimate when it's not, and it's very rarely not crowded.
Small is good because it takes less to fill. That's always
fair enough. Okay, so we've got Resto, success. We've got Cannibal, success in a number of ways, because it's been a frankly, restaurateurs around the country who come to New York and seek inspiration find their way to the Cannibal, because of the uniqueness of what you're doing there. It's part of growing a business. You talked about, hey, we didn't know about butchering. Hey, we didn't know about a lot of things. You really started building a team, though, when Cannibal came out. You brought on, you know, one of the really top notch front of the house guys that's been in New York in the last 10 years, Corey Lane?
Yes, yeah.
That's a stroke of good fortune, or is it a stroke of good planning?
You know, it's probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, it's – the idea has always been to put – you know, what do you say? The best CEOs in the world, the best leaders in the world surround themselves with great people, and they try not to get in the way of what they're doing.
Yeah, better, smarter people than me. I try to hire smarter people than me.
That's what I want.
And so Corey opened up a couple of little no-name restaurants, right?
Right. He's been involved in a couple of really small little restaurants named Momofuku, Noodle Bar, Sambar, Mapesh, Co.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
Modest successes. And now he's with you. He's the director of operations.
Director of operations for both the restaurants.
And when you have a director of operations, plural,
yes,
that means you plan on having more to do.
Absolutely.
So was Corey brought on because you got a growth idea?
Without question. I mean, that's the idea. We've been friends for a long time. Great mutual respect. I mean, back when we were both young in the industry and doing geek wine tastings together, just to learn a little bit more, talking about business, just to learn a little bit more, you know, bouncing ideas off, which is, you know, one of my most favorite things about the industry is that reciprocity that you get. And it's really a nice thing. I mean, that's not only with Corey, but other, you know, other...
We were talking a little bit about that. You got a good core group of consigliere, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's important, you know. You have to... Everybody's experience brings something to the table. And the more you can discuss the ideas and be candid. I mean, I talk, you know, with some of my closest peers in the industry, it's very, you know, we're open books with each other. Full financial disclosure of everything. It's like, this is what's going on. Because it really puts perspective on how you're doing. You get a true barometer.
Right.
You know, oh, that was effective for you. Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to try that. That really made a difference in how your operation works. I'm going to try that.
And information exchange between peers is again, another thing that's fascinating for me. I'd love to be a fly on the wall when a group of restaurateurs are talking, when a group of chefs are talking.
Mm-hmm.
I love to listen to it. I guess I'm an industry speak geek, because it fascinates me to hear how people are thinking. When I hear that, though, and when I see that, I actually often wonder, do you have any heroes in this business? I mean, this is a very interesting business. And there is, as you point out, passionate, and it can create great loyalties and great dislikes.
Right.
But the I don't care about the dislikes for right now.
Right.
But what about heroes? Who does a great job?
I don't have any. I don't really have any dislikes. You know, Jason Denton, who was the first. He was the first owner operator that I want. That's the only person I wanted to work for, and yeah. I was really ecstatic to work for him at Enoteca down on the Lower East Side.
Right.
I wanted to work at Lupa. That was the restaurant. That's the restaurant that turned me on.
Right.
It was watching him move around the floor, and I at first I thought, oh, here's a guy, this guy's a maitre d' or something like that, and then I realized that he's the owner and he's moving around that floor, making sure everybody's really happy, and he just had that sense. He had that touch, and it was amazing to me, And so, that was definitely somebody that I was, I wouldn't change it for the world to have a chance to work.
A couple of quick questions, right?
Sure.
Bang bang questions. All right, restaurant, chef driven, concept driven, which do you prefer?
It's so hard to answer. Depends on the restaurant. On the restaurant. It really does.
All right. Another quick question. What scares the hell out of you?
Staffing.
Yeah.
Staffing great people. Staffing people that are committed. That are completely committed. And that's whether or not they're in the industry to be in the industry or not.
Yeah.
I just want people, I want less entitled, more dedicated employment force for our industry.
Don't we all? Yeah. And I think, from what I see, frankly, people who do it, especially in New York, they wear it on their sleeves when they're, who's putting their guts into it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, goals. I want to hear about you've done incredible things in less than a five-year span. What am I going to expect? What am I going to see in 5 years from Christian Papanicolaou and his restaurant group?
We've got some new concepts on the queue, which we're really excited about. There's definitely expansion. I mean, I think I'd like to get to the point, it's not a numbers game per se. I definitely have a number in my mind of where I'd like to see our company be in 5 and 10 years.
Yeah.
The goal setting is a really integral part of how we think. If you don't know where you're going, you don't know how to get there. It's a very simple mindset. And
you surround yourself with a great team. You actually listen to the team.
Yes.
You make decisions after you listen to the team. It's not always a democracy, I'm sure, but it's again plurality. We
yes.
talked about that right at the beginning of the show. Multiple minds, multiple experiences. I think give guys like you a real advantage when they want to grow. If there's a young person out there today who's at Babson or mm-hmm. who's at.
They're all going in the finance.
Well, okay. But you know what? Not all of them are going to stay there.
Right.
Because just like this industry, it ain't for everybody.
Right.
That person who's going to do, and please, I'm going to say, don't use the word passion. The person who's going to succeed in this business of opening restaurants, opening multiple units, what are the two things that person needs to have other than passion?
They have to have great wherewithal.
Yeah, patience is important.
Patience, wherewithal. It's something that you can't want it too quickly. You just right. can't. You can't want it too quickly. You've got to have a long-term vision in this. Slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah.
It just does. Otherwise, you open and you close. And, the second piece is, take some finance courses.
Yeah.
Take some accounting courses.
Yeah.
Understand your business. Don't. As amazing as the salad is, as amazing as the beer and the wine are, I applaud every person that doesn't have the background that I have that's successful, because I wonder how. I go, I don't even know how. It took me a lot of learning to get to where I am, where I can, I can be my own accountant. I could be my own, I can finance my own company, but I still don't do it myself. But it's just a.
It is so critical. And you're giving such good advice. And in my business, in the legal business, when we started to bring a young lawyer on, we'd say, listen, you've got to make sure that you're really keeping track of your time, because time is the dragon, mm-hmm. and you got to make it your friend or it eats you.
Yes.
And that's exactly what you're saying about coming to grips. A lot of people say, well, I'm not a good numbers person, or I'm not that. The hell with that. Everybody's a numbers person.
Yes.
Everybody can count to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to make or break. It's going to create the opportunity to be sustainable for your business.
Right, right. The third thing was to surround yourself with not only your team internally, but your external team. And those are your great, as you'd like to put it, consiglieres, you know.
Well, you know, it's I agree with that. I agree with all three of your thoughts. And not surprisingly, because you put something pretty special together, and I'm looking forward to the next 5 years seeing what you got.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your growing family.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I know that's very important to you.
Just had a new baby girl.
It's so wonderful.
Got a little boy and little girl, Alex and Gigi. Very happy about that.
Nothing like motivation, right?
Yeah. Tons of motivation. You know, you don't... You wake up early in the morning, there is no getting out of that.
Amen, amen.
So it's a great thing.
I'm with you there. Well, Christian, I want to thank you for coming out to Brooklyn today.
Thanks for having
greatly
me.
Greatly appreciate your time and your thoughts.
Love being here.
It's it's an honor to talk to somebody who puts their money where their mouth is. This is Phil Colicchio signing off for the business of the business here on heritageradionetwork.org. Christian, there just might be another beer at that bar.
I think so.
All right. So. Why don't we go test it out?
Take care.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.